Hello, listeners. Welcome to Iris, and welcome to the reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls Courier. It's Wednesday, October 5th. I'm your volunteer reader, Bob Young. Let's look at today's weather forecast from KCRG in Cedar Rapids. It's titled, A Few Showers Possible Today, Cooler and Windy Tomorrow. A few light showers are still on track to move across eastern Iowa today. Any rainfall that happens to occur in your area continues to look light and scattered overall. Plan on highs generally around 70 this afternoon. Late tonight, we can't totally rule out some patches of fog. Tomorrow, our highs will likely hit around lunchtime, then the temperatures will probably start falling. Winds will increase as well as a cold front moves through. This will lead to a hard freeze in some areas by Friday night into Saturday morning. Look for our temperatures to rebound this weekend. The front page of the Courier today has these articles. Cedar Falls Council modifies fireworks ordinance. Mayor's Fun Run gets fourth graders' hearts pumping. Iowa schools get $6 million for mental health support. And we begin reading, Trump asks Supreme Court's help. This story filed by Eric Tucker of the Associated Press. Dateline, Washington. Lawyers for former President Donald Trump asked the U.S. Supreme Court on Tuesday to step into the legal fight over the classified documents seized during an FBI search of his Florida estate, escalating a dispute over the powers of an independent arbiter appointed to inspect the records. The Trump team asked the justices to overturn a lower court ruling and allow the arbiter, called a special master, to review the roughly 100 documents with classification markings that were taken in the August 8th search of Mar-a-Lago. A three-judge panel from the Atlanta-based U.S. Court of Appeals for the 11th Circuit last month limited the special master's review to the much larger tranche of non-classified documents. The judges, including two Trump appointees, sided with the Justice Department, which argued there was no legal basis for the special master to conduct his own review of the classified records. But Trump's lawyers said in their application to the Supreme Court that it was essential for the special master to have access to the classified records to, quote, determine whether documents bearing classification markings are in fact classified, and regardless of classification, whether those records are personal records or presidential records, unquote. Quote, since President Trump had absolute authority over classification decisions during his presidency, the current status of any disputed document cannot possibly be determined solely by reference to the markings on that document, the application states. It says that without the special master review, quote, the unchallenged views of the current Justice Department would supersede the established authority of the chief executive, unquote. An independent review, the Trump team says, ensures a transparent process that provides much-needed oversight, unquote. The FBI says it seized roughly 11,000 documents, including about 100 with classification markings, during the search. The Trump team asked a judge in Florida, Eileen Cannon, to appoint a special master to do an independent review of the records. Cannon subsequently assigned veteran Brooklyn judge Raymond Deary to review the records and segregate those that may be protected by claims of attorney-client privilege and executive privilege. She also barred the FBI from being able to use the classified documents as part of its criminal investigation. The Justice Department appealed, prompting the 11th Circuit to lift Cannon's hold on investigators' ability to scrutinize the classified records. The appeals court also ruled that the department did not have to provide Deary with access to the classified records. Trump's lawyers submitted the Supreme Court application to Justice Clarence Thomas, who oversees emergency matters from Florida and several other southern states. Thomas can act on his own or, as is usually done, refer the emergency appeal to the rest of the court. Thomas came under scrutiny for his vote in a different Trump documents case, in which he was the only member of the court to vote against allowing the U.S. House Committee investigating the January 6, 2021 Capitol riot to obtain Trump's records held by the National Archives and Records Administration. Thomas's wife, Virginia, known as Ginny Thomas, is a conservative activist and staunch Trump supporter who attended the January 6th Stop the Steal rally on the Ellipse and wrote to then White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows in the weeks following the election, encouraging him to work to overturn Biden's victory and keep Trump in office. She also contacted lawmakers in Arizona and Wisconsin in the weeks after the election. The House Committee investigating the January 6th insurrection recently interviewed Ginny Thomas, and she stood by the false claim that the 2020 election was fraudulent. The next story was written by Andy Malone. Mayor's fun run gets fourth graders' hearts pumping. And the story begins with a large color photograph of the fourth graders at the starting line of the fun run. Dateline, Waterloo. A mile doesn't seem that far until you're out there running the full distance. That was a common sentiment expressed by fourth graders who participated Tuesday in the 23rd annual Mayor's Fun Run. Lots of anticipation was brewing before the 1,000 students from 14 Waterloo public and parochial schools were released in small groups to sprint the run's opening leg. The first students from Lou Henry, Orange, and Lincoln Elementary Schools took off shortly after 10:15 a.m. at the corner of 4th and Commercial Streets. The run, founded by former Waterloo Mayor John Wolfe, is meant to spark a drive for healthy living and physical activity. Quote, "I'm just going to go for it," said Taylor Squire, 8, from Lou Henry, before taking off. Tori Hodges, 9, from Lincoln Elementary School, touted her long legs and her starting stance as reasons she'd have a successful day at the races. Mayor Quentin Hart participated in his 8th run, his 6th as mayor, or what he called, quote, "his favorite time of the year." He joked with the kids, who he called the pride of Waterloo, that he's never lost a race. But later he admitted he starts in the back and has never taken home a victory, finishing last every year. Like many kids, Aspen Weinstead, 9, from Crittrell, was a bit nervous heading into the run. On the other side of the aisle, her classmate Aiden Magnuson was overflowing with confidence. Quote, "I'm going to go out slow and save all of my energy for Mr. Hart," he said. By the time the children had looped across the river, down Fayette Street, onto 5th Street, and made the last turn onto Jefferson Street toward the finish line at the River Loop Expo Plaza, most were walking and enjoying the fresh air. Some threw in a last jolt of effort when encouragement came from sidelines. Quote, "You're almost there," and "Come on, you got this," onlookers cheered. Toy hand clappers were handed out before the event and could be heard along the final stretch. Quote, "It's excellent seeing kids exercising and not behind some type of Xbox or some type of video game. It's really incredible to see all the happy and excited fourth graders," said Hart. "We want to make sure the kids get a chance to enjoy themselves, and we motivate them along the way. Quote, "I'm really proud of them. They did an excellent job, even though some were a bit tired at the end," unquote. A lot of the children had the opportunity to meet and take photos with Mr. Mayor, who many viewed as a local celebrity. Additionally, the kids gathered before and after the run at the River Loop Expo Plaza, where they were greeted by upbeat music, the West High School dance team, and even Waterloo Blackhawks mascot Tommy Hawk. They received sandwiches and water to replenish the energy exerted during the run. Quote, "It's great to bring all the fourth graders together to rally around a positive cause in support of health and wellness," said Brian Gustloff, a physical education teacher at Lowell Elementary School. Quote, "We have great weather and we hope to keep this up as they get older and head out into the community and experience physical activity at places like the Cedar Valley Sportsplex and the YMCA," unquote. By the end of the run, Lamarian Miller, 9, from Lincoln, said, quote, it felt good and bad at the same time. He was feeling the effort in his legs and chest. Callie Kloss, 9, from Lincoln, was thinking about how sweaty she was and how if she was going to exercise in the future, it would be through some other means than running. Quote, it was great exercise, declared Asher Craig, 9, from Orange. A boy and girl from each school were also recognized for being kids of character after Ron Steele, longtime anchor with KWWL, took the mic as the master of ceremonies. He touted the gorgeous day and got the kids excited about the fun activity ahead. The event was put on by HART, Waterloo's Leisure Services, Main Street Waterloo, Waterloo Schools, Waterloo Kiwanis Club, and other sponsors. Next is a story that comes from the Courier's Des Moines Bureau, journalist Tom Barton. $6 million headed to Iowa schools for mental health support. The U.S. Department of Education last week announced awards to states and territories totaling nearly $1 billion through the bipartisan gun violence bill signed by President Joe Biden in June after the aftermath of the Uvalde, Texas school shooting. The money is intended to foster safe, inclusive, and supportive learning environments, including funding to address mental and emotional health concerns for students, according to the U.S. Department of Education. Schools might add counselors, social workers, and psychologists, partner with community organizations to offer mental health support for students, training staff on how to handle trauma, or create calming spaces for staff and students, officials say. States are being directed to use the money in districts with high rates of poverty, chronic absenteeism, a high number of referrals to juvenile justice system, high incidence of bullying or harassment, or districts where students recently experienced a natural disaster or a traumatic event. Money could also be used for, quote, limited infrastructure improvements, such as repairing or replacing building locks and securing building entrances. School districts would competitively apply for funding from state education agencies, according to U.S. Secretary of Education Miguel A. Cardona. A representative from the Iowa Department of Education was unavailable for comment on Monday. Research has shown that students who feel a sense of belonging in school are more likely to perform better academically and less likely to be absent, engage in risky behavior, experience emotional distress, and misbehave, Cardona wrote to education officials. The U.S. Department of Education is encouraging states to prioritize funding to school districts that meet the following criteria. Use evidence-based strategies to create positive, inclusive, and supportive school environments. Increase access to interventions and strategies that support students' physical, emotional, and mental and social well-being. Engage students, families, educators, staff, and community organizations in the selection and implementation of strategies and interventions. And lastly, design policies and practices that advance equity, protect student rights, and are responsive to underserved students. Cardona notes in his letter that research demonstrates students of color are disciplined more harshly and frequently, disproportionately so, than their white peers, quote, especially for minor and more subjective offenses. And those students are more likely to be met with discipline rather than the appropriate mental health assessment, treatment, and supports they require. Such disparities in discipline policies have also been reported by and among students with disabilities, English language learners, and LGBTQ students. Last month, a federal judge denied a request from a group of parents to bar the Lynn Mar School District from enforcing a series of transgender student support policies for grades 7 through 12. U.S. District Court Judge C.J. Williams concluded that granting an injunction against the policies would leave transgender students subject to bullying and harassment. He wrote that the policies ensure Lynn Mar schools are productive, safe places to educate children, and to ensure no child is subject to harassment, bullying, or made to feel lesser for any reason by students, staff, and others while at school, unquote. The seven anonymous parents who filed the lawsuit fear the policy allows school staff to create a gender support plan without parental consent. The parents assert their fundamental right to make decisions about the care, custody, and control of their children, according to court documents. John Speer, chief administrator of the Grant Wood Area Education Agency, said the announced funding will enable school districts to provide more resources in a more timely manner. Quote, "That's a win for students," said Speer, who noted mental health and student behavior consistently remains among the top most pressing needs among school districts. Quote, "The pandemic, I think, kind of has exacerbated or made that even a little more noticeable than it was before," he said. Quote, "There just are not enough resources available, even in a resource-rich area like the corridor is and our surrounding counties. There just isn't enough licensed mental health counselors to meet the needs of a growing student population that needs support more than ever. As a result, students often have to wait for extended periods before they can see a counselor or be evaluated for mental health services." Speer said Grantwood AEA has tried to connect schools and its partners as best as possible to local resources through partnerships with Tanager Place, Covenant Family Solution, and Foundation 2 Crisis Services. Quote, "We do have some districts that have licensed mental health counselors right in the school, who both help staff with professional learning around the signs of students who are in distress, but also can provide actual mental health counseling on site," Speer said. The Grantwood AEA supports more than 72,000 students in public and approved non-public schools in Benton, Cedar, Iowa, Johnson, Jones, Lynn, and Washington counties. Speer added the agency has also worked with Foundation 2 to get every school building in its 7-county coverage area access to mobile crisis counseling, where they can call a number and have a mental health counselor dispatched to help a student in distress. Quote, "It's a growing crisis, both for students and adults, but anything that can be done to help that situation will be greatly appreciated." Andy Malone filed our next story. Cedar Falls Council modifies fireworks ordinance. Dateline Cedar Falls. This was the first year fireworks were legally allowed to be shot off in Cedar Falls. And this story opens with a photograph of a large store of fireworks arranged on tables. The city council lifted the ban in June and replaced it with a 3-day window on and around the Independence Day holiday. Fast forward to Monday night. The council reached agreement on making some tweaks for future years, but were split 4-3 on the specifics. Councilors Dave Sires, Susan DeBurr, and Gil Schultz dissented. The elected officials listened to feedback from law enforcement and committed during their committee meeting to allowing fireworks July 3rd and 4th, and not July 5th, a day officials said was rare for usage anyway. They also agreed 10:30 p.m. would be an appropriate cutoff time for the other 2 days, July 3rd and 4th, because then it would be consistent and give residents a more reasonable amount of darkness to shoot them off, as opposed to 10 p.m., which had been the cutoff for July 3rd and 5th. The debate revolved around whether to give the council the option to designate additional legal days, for instance, in the case July 5th fell on a weekend night, to which the majority favored. Quote, "I guess what I don't want to have, though, is to say we're going to say July 3rd and 4th only, and then when there's a Tuesday and Wednesday, we're going to go ahead and penalize anyone that shoots off on Saturday," said Councillor Dustin Ganfield. "That seems like it's punishing working folks who are going to be working the next day on the 3rd and 4th. That might elect to do a Saturday should future councils provide that opportunity." Quote, "If we leave that option in there, to give the potential for an either-or, we're going to find enhanced peace and quiet on the weeknights and every other night that's not designated. The minority favored the consistency of the same 2 days year after year. And now let's turn the page to the Cedar Valley section, which opens up with two large color photographs with the caption, "Above the front facade and columns of the church at 9th and Clay Streets in Cedar Falls, crumble as an Aaron's excavation worker demolishes the building with an excavator on Tuesday. The building used to house Cedar Falls Mennonite Church and Casa Montessori Preschool, which moved out more recently. It is being torn down to make way for a pocket residential neighborhood." And then the picture at left is captioned, "The bell tower portion of the church at 9th and Clay Streets in Cedar Falls crumbles down as Aaron's excavation worker demolishes the building in an excavator on Tuesday." The photographs were taken by Chris Zoller, the Courier staff photographer. The first article is titled, "Cedar Falls Raises Section 8 Housing Subsidies. Rent Subsidy Maximum Thresholds Are Increased by the Cedar Falls City Council." This story filed by Andy Malone and opens with a photograph of the City Council in session. Dateline Cedar Falls. The City Council has confirmed higher maximum thresholds for the rental subsidies that Section 8 participants receive in Cedar Falls. An increased payment standard for families and individuals who benefit from the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development Housing Choice Voucher Program was unanimously approved Monday by the council without dissension. About 200 people or families currently receive vouchers in Cedar Falls, Community Development Director Stephanie Sheets said after the meeting. She noted they might be able to get a little higher subsidy through the federal program if their income qualifies. For one- or two-bedroom housing, the maximum amount of monthly assistance would go from $737 to $814 and $922 to $1,027, respectively. Those with three, four, or zero bedrooms would see respective increases from $1,222 to $1,365, from $1,554 to $1,750, and from $651 to $691. Under the program, tenant pays a minimum of 30% of their income toward housing costs. It pays the difference between the rent amount and household income up to the maximum payment standard. People can apply online to be placed on the waiting list for Cedar Falls. Average time on the wait list is 1 to 5 years, according to the city's website. The council's vote only increases the maximum amount, not the number of vouchers available to the city. 2 weeks ago, HUD announced more than 19,000 new vouchers were awarded to almost 2,000 public housing agencies across the country. Housing authorities, included in nearby Waterloo and Evansdale, received 3 and 7 more, respectively. However, Cedar Falls was not among the benefactors of what the Biden administration calls the most expansive allocation of flexible new rental assistance in 20 years, unquote. The Iowa Northland Regional Housing Authority received 4 more Section 8 participants in Bremer, Butler, Chickasaw, Grundy, Buchanan, and Blackhawk counties. That excludes anyone in the cities of Waterloo, Cedar Falls, and Evansdale. According to Robin Casmano, the city's housing program specialist, the payment standard is based on the area's annual fair market rents. HUD defines those as an estimate of the money that would cover rent and utility expenses for 40% of the area's rental housing units. Quote, in 2021, the FMR, determined by HUD, seemed to be on the low side for rents in Cedar Falls, said Casmano in her memo to the council. Quote, the increase in the 2020 FMR is more aligned with the current housing market in Cedar Falls and will allow current and future participants a better chance of finding suitable housing. HUD requires the payment standards to be within 90 to 100% of the FMR, she said. Quote, historically, the city has opted to utilize a 110% standard for 1 to 4 bedroom units, given the city's relatively higher cost rental market within the metro area. That's the percentage the council ultimately approved on Monday night. Next, Melody Parker filed this story. Theater UNI brings comedy and romance to the stage in Shakespeare's As You Like It, Dateline Cedar Falls. The rules of romance are out the proverbial window in Shakespeare's pastoral comedy As You Like It. Theater UNI's production opening Thursday is filled with disguised lovers, mistaken identities, bawdy jokes, and romance. Quote, one of the things I love about Shakespeare is it gives college students a real sense of continuum in theater. Actors have been performing this play nonstop for 450 years. That is really powerful, said director Matthew James Weedman, associate professor of performance at the University of Northern Iowa. Performances are scheduled at 7:30 p.m. Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, and October 13th through the 15th, and 2 p.m. Sunday, and October 16th. The show is being presented in the round in the Bertha Martin Theater at the Strayer Wood Theater on the UNI campus. Quote, it's a unique setting, so the audience is on all sides. It's a small theater, very personal and intimate, with the audience just a few feet from the actors, Weedman said. Quote, As You Like It is one of the most performed plays in history, filled with romance, songs, mistaken identities, philosophy, politics, satire, cynicism, humor, and humanity. The story of this love quadrangle follows Rosalind as she flees her uncle's court to the Forest of Arden, where she wears a disguise and falls in love with Orlando, while encountering such characters as Jacques. He delivers some of Shakespeare's most memorial lines, including, quote, all the world's a stage and too much of a good thing, unquote. The Theater UNI production was cast last spring with primarily second through fourth year students. Rehearsals began in August, 3 days before classes officially began. Quote, this is our first production of the year and feels like this is our return to normal theater season after almost 3 years. We're excited to be producing live theater the way we used to, Weedman said. He is directing a cast of 17, with several cast members playing multiple roles. For several days before beginning stage rehearsals, the cast sat at a table reading and rereading their lines. Quote, I wanted them to be really clear about what they were saying, what the language means, the director explained. Weedman has trimmed the tale so it flows faster, but the language is classic Elizabethan English. Quote, that gives the actors the experience of speaking these words, these big pieces of text, and a chance to play with language and use it to tell a story, unquote. Weedman said, quote, the thing is to recognize Shakespeare isn't academic. It's not like medicine you have to take. It's not something shiny that you look at from afar. It can be really silly and slapstick. Reading it in a classroom is sort of deadly. Shakespeare is meant to be heard and seen, not read, unquote. And the bard loves dirty jokes. Quote, there's such beautiful poetry in Shakespeare, right next to a dirty joke. The students were shocked at some of the references, Weedman noted. The stage set is minimalistic and abstract. Costumes have a folk, almost hippie feeling. They're very lively, he said. UNI School of Music professor Jonathan Schwabe has composed and recorded original music for 6 songs performed in the show. Quote, this is a very demanding show with a lot to learn. I'm stunned at how hard the students have worked, Weedman added. Matinees will be performed for local high school students. Scenic designer is Luke Van Cleve, a 2020 UNI theater graduate. Costume designer is Amy Royberg, associate professor of design and production, and Eric Lang, theater department lead, is the lighting designer. Production manager is Dalton Roques. Tickets start at $20, free for UNI students. They are available at unitix.uni.edu and at the Gallagher Blue Dorn Performing Arts Center box office. For more information, visit their website. And listeners, at this time, we want to remind you that you're hearing the reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls Courier for Wednesday, October 5th on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now let's turn to today's obituaries. Cedar Falls. Richard Sands Douglas, 95, of Cedar Falls, passed away at Nation Cottage of Western Home Communities on Sunday, October 2, 2022. He was born March 27, 1927, in Westfield, New Jersey, son of Ira Crawford and Carolyn Maiden Name Sands Douglas. Dick graduated with a law degree from Duke, North Carolina, and a specialist degree in education from Rutgers University in New Jersey. He met Frances Edwards while working on Law Journal at Duke, and they married on October 10, 1953. Dick worked for Golden Guernsey Dairy in Point Pleasant, New Jersey, from 1954 to 1959, then Newark College of Engineering, also in New Jersey, until 1975, when the family moved to Cedar Falls, where he worked as an administrator at UNI until his retirement in 1989. Dick's memorial service will be at 11 o'clock a.m. on Saturday, October 8, 2022, at the Cedar Falls United Church of Christ. Interment with military honors will follow at a later date at Fairview Cemetery of Westfield, New Jersey. Flowers are welcome, but please consider a memorial to Cedar Falls UCC or the Western Home Foundation, 5307 Caraway Lane, Cedar Falls, Iowa, 50613. Your condolences may be left at www.dahlfuneralhome.com. Cedar Falls. Dennis Charles Seifer, 78, formerly of Cedar Falls, died Saturday, October 1, 2022, in Dallas, Texas. Dennis was born January 25, 1944, in Beeman, Iowa, to the late C. Harry and Alice Anna Edwards Seifer. Dennis attended the University of Northern Iowa and graduated in 1968. There he also met his future wife, Pamela Talley. Dennis loved spending time with his grandkids and family and working on the farm. In his free time, he relaxed by working on his tractors or his beloved 1963 Corvette. Dennis was a career farmer and salesperson, working for Burroughs Corporation, Matt Parrott & Sons, and later owned his own business, Denny's Business Forms Plus. Visitation for Dennis will be held at 2 o'clock p.m. on Sunday, October 9th, at Dahl Van Hoof Schoof Funeral Home in Cedar Falls, followed by a memorial service at 3 o'clock p.m. Memorials may be directed to Exceptional Persons Incorporated or Cedar Bend Humane Society, both in Waterloo. Next, Waterloo. James P., known as Jim Wilson, 87 of Waterloo, died Saturday, October 1st, 2022, at his home. He was born January 19, 1935, in Hampton, Iowa, son of James and Mabel Peters Wilson. He married Dorothy A. Kearns on July 9, 1955, at St. John's Catholic Church in Waterloo. Jim was a gifted athlete. He was a state champion quarter miler. He attended the University of Iowa, where he lettered in track. Jim had a career in sales, and he was support staff at EPI Group Homes. He was also the shuttle driver for Deary and Witham. Jim was active in the Catholic Church as a deacon. He loved to tell you a story and was an avid fisherman and was awarded several Iowa Master Angler Awards. Jim was a lifelong Hawkeye fan. He enjoyed a good game of cards. Jim dearly loved his grandchildren and great-grandchildren. He loved spending time with family and friends at their lake house on Lake Ponderosa. Memorial services for Jim will be at 10:30 a.m. Thursday, October 6th, at Queen of Peace Catholic Church. Public visitation will be for 1 hour before services at the church. Haggerty Wyckoff Grarup Funeral Service on West Ridgeway is assisting the family. Memorials. In lieu of flowers, the family asks that memorials be directed to Cedar Valley Hospice, 900 Tower Park Drive, Waterloo, Iowa, 50701, or Queen of Peace Catholic Church, 320 Mulberry Street in Waterloo, Iowa, 50703. There will be a live stream of the service at the Queen of Peace Parish's website. Online condolences may be left at www.haggertywyckoffgrarup.com. Here the courier lists one death notice. Kenneth Fred Feckers, 63, of Clarksville, died Monday, October 3, 2022, at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics in Iowa City. Arrangements are with Council Woodley Funeral Home of Green. Next, in Waterloo, Viola M. Reich, 89, of Waterloo, died Sunday, October 2, 2022, at Birdie Cottage in Waterloo. She was born on June 19, 1933, in Algona, the daughter of Fred and Frances Suave Betts. She was a graduate of Algona High School. Viola proudly served in the U.S. Army, stationed in Japan during the Korean conflict, where she received a Purple Heart. She married Marlo Reich in 1966 in East Dubuque, Illinois. She was a homemaker and had worked at John Deere Company in Waterloo, where she retired. She was a member of the Tripola VFW. Private family interment will be held in the Garden of Memory Cemetery at a later date. Memorials may be directed to the family, where a memorial fund will be established. Lock at Tower Park, 4140 Kimball Avenue in Waterloo, Iowa, 50701, is in charge of arrangements. Their phone number is area code 319-233-3146. Online condolences may be left at www.lockfuneralservices.com. Next, in Jessup, Thomas Tom M. Fuller, 82 years old, of Jessup, Iowa, died Monday, October 3, 2022, at the Western Home Communities Deary Suites in Cedar Falls, Iowa, following a short illness. Funeral services will be 11 a.m. on Friday, October 7, 2022, at the First Presbyterian Church in Jessup. Burial will follow at Cedar Crest Cemetery in Jessup. Visitation will be 5 o'clock p.m. to 7 o'clock p.m. on Thursday, October 6th, at White Funeral Home in Jessup. Visitation will continue for an hour before services Thursday at the church. Memorials may be directed to the church. Thomas Michael Fuller was born in Jessup, Iowa, on October 14, 1939, the son of Omer Basil Fuller and Mary, maiden name Woods, Fuller. He attended school in Jessup and graduated from Jessup High School with the class of 1958. On October 22, 1960, he married Diane Fisher. The couple later divorced. On December 22, 1980, he and the former Karen Lee Vi Smith were married in Cedar Falls, Iowa. They made their home in Jessup. Tom worked at John Deere Engine Works in Waterloo, Iowa, and was a member of the UAW Local 838. He loved golfing, building houses, and restoring automobiles. Tom had a spicy sense of humor that always kept people on their toes. He was a devout sports fan and loved to follow the Jessup Jayhawks, Pittsburgh Steelers, and Iowa Hawkeyes. Tom was a member of the Jessup Golf and Country Club and spent a lot of time volunteering his talents as a handyman. He was a member of the First Presbyterian Church and was a loving husband, father, and grandfather that will be missed by many. White Funeral Home in Jessup, Iowa, is in charge of arrangements. Condolences may be placed at www.white-mounthome.com. Next, in Waterloo, Marlo D. Reich, 94, of Waterloo, died Tuesday, October 4, 2022, at Birdie Cottage in Waterloo. He was born July 25, 1928, in Waverly, the son of Albert and Evelyn Smith Reich. He was a graduate of Sumner High School. Martel proudly served in the U.S. Army, stationed in Alaska during the Korean conflict. He married Viola Bites Decker in 1966 in East Dubuque, Illinois. He worked at John Deere Company until his retirement. He was a member of the Tripola VFW. A private family interment will be held in the Garden of Memories Cemetery at a later date. Memorials may be directed to the family, where a memorial fund will be established. Lockett Tower Park, 4140 Kimball Avenue, Waterloo, Iowa, 50701, is in charge of arrangements. Their phone number is 319-233-3146. Online condolences may be left at www.lockfuneralservices.com. Next, in Waterloo, Scott Douglas Sargent, 68, of Waterloo, passed away on Friday, September 30, 2022. Scott was born on July 21, 1954, in Waterloo, the son of Douglas and Rosemary Nellis Sargent. He graduated from Orange High School in 1972 and Iowa State University in 1976. Scott married Ann Schaefer in Jessup on October 4, 1986. Scott was a sports writer for the Waterloo Courier and the Times Republican in Marshalltown. He worked for Gildner's Men's Store, as well as Lennox Heating and Cooling in Marshalltown and Dallas, Texas. He decided to come back to Iowa and worked at John Deere, Controlofax, and VGM. He was the editor of both the Connecting Link and the Chip Shot magazines. He taught adult education classes at Hawkeye Community College. His volunteer efforts included Waterloo Public Schools Junior Achievement Counselor, Sacred Heart Lector, Usher, and Sacred Heart Golf Outing Co-Chair. Scott was an avid golfer, Iowa State Cyclone, and New York Yankees fan. Haggerty Wychuff Grarup Funeral Service in West Ridgeway in Waterloo is caring for Scott and his family. Public visitation will be held from 4 o'clock to 8 o'clock p.m. on Thursday, October 6th, as well as 1 hour prior to the service on Friday. The funeral mass will be held at 10:30 a.m. on Friday, October 7th, at Sacred Heart Catholic Church in Waterloo. In lieu of flowers, memorial contributions may be directed in Scott's name to the family, who are establishing a memorial fund. For further information or to leave an online condolence, please visit www.haggertywychuffgrarup.com. Well, that's all of the obituaries. Let's return now to local news from the Courier. Second person arrested for fake checks used to buy vehicles. Cedar Falls. A second person has been arrested for allegedly using fake and bad checks to buy cars from dealerships. Jamarcus Jamal Ketton Sr., 34, of Waterloo, was arrested Monday for 3 counts of first-degree theft and 1 count of second-degree theft and forgery. Bond was set at $80,000. Authorities allege Ketton bought a 2013 Buick Regal from John Deere on University Avenue for $10,847 on December 6th, using a check from a SoFi Money account. The check was later returned because the account had insufficient funds. The vehicle was later located and returned to the dealership. Ketton also is accused of using fake checks from Vero Bank to buy a 2009 Chevrolet Suburban for $10,943 and a 2016 Chevrolet Malibu for $12,000 for Community Motors on University Avenue on January 28th and February 11th. Then on July 28th, he allegedly returned to Community Motors and bought a 2007 Honda Accord for $9,435, using a Sutton bank check that was later found to be invalid. Ketton is the second person to be arrested as part of the scheme. In September, police arrested Devonta Cortez Parker Johnson, 20, of Waterloo, for theft in connection with 2 checks written to John Deere for vehicle purchases in December. Now under the Government and Politics heading, Waterloo Council approves update to Urban Renewal Project, Waterloo. Further funding for renewal and development work may become available to the downtown area in the near future, following a resolution by the City Council to list it as a blighted area. The Council Monday unanimously approved a previous designation for much of downtown Waterloo as an area of slum and blight, according to Public Works Director Noel Anderson. This opens up the possibility of outside funds and tax credits to bring some much-needed improvements to the area. Quote, "This is just the kind of a plan that authorizes us the ability to help those projects," Anderson said. The blighted designation runs from Franklin Street down to U.S. Highway 218 and stretches east to the area of 9th and 10th Streets. It includes the Grout Museum, the Tech Works Campus, and John Deere. Anderson added that, as part of the state code, any time the city adds new projects or development agreements into the urban renewal area, the plans must be updated to include all the new projects. The designation came as part of that update. These projects include continued work on the Marina and Whitewater project. Quote, "By having the urban renewal area in place, we have the option, the flexibility, to have projects happen, give incentives," Anderson said. Quote, "So basically, it's about keeping our options open to try and help for urban redevelopment projects," unquote. The council also authorized a future issuance of $1.06 million in sewer revenue capital loan notes to finance improvements to the sewer system. Construction plans for a sanitary sewer serving the North Crossing area, bounded by Logan Avenue, East 4th Street, Ralston Road, and East Donald Street, was also approved. I see now there are two more obituaries on the next page, so let's look at those. Waterloo. Timothy Tim J. Conley, 55, of Waterloo, passed away on Thursday, September 29th, 2022. A public visitation for Tim will be held on Sunday, October 9th, 2022, from 4 o'clock to 8 o'clock p.m. at Haggerty Weychuff Grarup Funeral Service on West Ridgeway at 300 West Ridgeway, Waterloo, Iowa, 50701. A funeral mass will be held at 10:30 a.m. on Monday, October 10th, 2022, at St. Edward's Catholic Church, with Father Scott Bullock officiating. There will be a one-hour visitation prior to the service on Monday. In lieu of flowers, memorial contributions may be directed to Tim's family, which will be later designated to a trust in Carrington's name. For further information or to leave an online condolence, please visit www.haggertyweychuffgrarup.com. Timothy Joseph Conley was born on March 1, 1967, in Tucson, Arizona, the son of Frank and Penny Rankin Conley. On July 25, 1992, Jim was united in marriage to his love, Kristen Kelly. From this union, the couple were blessed with three daughters, Paige, Erin, and Kerrigan. Tim was caring, kind, funny, goofy, witty, and could bring life to any party. He was a fixture in the Cedar Valley, often known as the Carlos guy, after working for Carlos O'Kelly for 31.5 years before retiring in April 2022. He always had a way with people. He could befriend just about anyone and could never go anywhere without running into someone who knew him. Tim would go above and beyond for those he knew, whether it was as simple as offering a ride to and from work or dinner to someone going through a tough time. One of his favorite traditions was taking chips and salsa to the local fire department and emergency rooms during Thanksgiving and Christmas to help brighten their holiday away from family. If ever there was a problem that needed fixing, Tim was first in line with a large roll of duct tape. Need a poster on the wall? Duct tape. Hole in your shoe? Duct tape. He was sure you could fix just about anything with a roll. In his spare time, Tim enjoyed fishing and watching old westerns as well as being in his kitchen experimenting and elevating recipes. He'd often ask for dinner suggestions for Sunday family dinners, and even the simplest of requests were spiced up with a little something extra, a condition his family lovingly referred to as over-itis. Though he was an excellent cook, always making enough food to feed a small army, fitting for his army brat upbringing, he never could perfect the art of not burning the bread, a running joke amongst the family. He was the best husband, dad, and pop around, always taking opportunities to joke around and make up stories that sounded so true, only to hear the punchline at the end. Since retirement in spring of this year, Tim was able to enjoy the last 5 months making memories with his family. He loved anything and everything from giving treats and snuggles to his grandchildren to small weekend adventures and full-out family vacations. No matter the length of the trip, he was always one to power through the drive to get to the destination, though he still made time for his wife's numerous 7-Eleven Slurpee stops. He always joked that his secret to surviving long drives was to play Gregorian chants over the radio and lull the rest of the car's passengers to sleep. Though he loved vacations with his family, he hated taking photos. Over the course of his 30-year marriage, he learned resistance as futile when his wife brought out the camera for her millionth picture. Next, in Waterloo, Betty O. Hollis, 75, of Waterloo, Iowa, died on Monday, October 3, 2022, at Unity Point Health Allen Hospital at Waterloo. She was born January 9, 1947, in Garner, the daughter of Joseph and Lillian Germeland Torkelson. She graduated from Garner Hayfield High School and the American Institute of Business. Betty married Curtis Hollis on June 9, 1968, at the Fertile Lutheran Church. She was the bookkeeper and secretary for Lane Haven Farms. Betty was a faithful and loving wife, mother, and grandmother. She was very generous, social, and a friend to many. She was a member and held multiple offices at the South Waterloo Church of the Brethren and Prairie Lakes Church, Waterloo, Cedar Falls Junior League, and with Blackhawk Grundy Mental Health Board and the Care Review Committee at Friendship Village. Services for Betty will be at 11 a.m. on Saturday, October 8, 2022, at Prairie Lakes Church in Cedar Falls. Visitation is 4 o'clock p.m. to 7 o'clock p.m. Friday, October 7, 2022, at Lock at Tower Park in Waterloo. A private burial will be held at Orange Township Cemetery in Waterloo. Memorials may be directed to include Prairie Lakes Church or Breakthrough Urban Ministries. Lock at Tower Park is in charge of arrangements. Condolences may be left at www.lockfuneralservices.com. Now we turn back to the local news stories. Cedar Falls woman arrested for attacking relatives with a knife and a tennis racket and boiling water. Story filed by Jeff Reinitz. Dateline Cedar Falls. A Cedar Falls woman has been arrested for allegedly attacking her mother with a knife in an argument over dog droppings. Cedar Falls police arrested Keyante Lene Evans, 19, on Sunday, on charges of domestic assault with a weapon, assault with bodily injury, and assault. Bond was set at $5,000. According to court records, Evans became upset after she was asked to pick up after the dog in the backyard of their Spruce Hills Drive home around 1:35 p.m. Evans allegedly hurled a pot of boiling water at family members and then grabbed a knife and chased her mother. Others in the house attempted to restrain Evans, but the mother suffered a minor stab wound to the chest. Evans struck another person with a tennis racket so hard that it broke the racket, according to court records. Another family member suffered a burn to the eye from the pot of boiling water. Next, woman arrested for robbery and attack, filed by Jeff Reinitz, Waterloo. One person has been arrested in connection with an attack on a woman outside an apartment in September. On Tuesday, Waterloo police arrested Taisha Marish Henderson, 24, of Waterloo on one count of second-degree robbery. She was released pending trial. Authorities allege Henderson and others pulled up to an apartment building at 1008 Levitt Street around 9 p.m. on September 20th. The group began punching Emali Cody, who was standing outside, until Cody's sisters came outside and intervened. Cody's phone and keys were stolen during the assault, according to court records. Next, incumbent Sand goes for humor again in re-election ad. Rob Sand, the Democratic incumbent state auditor, is taking the humorous route once again with the first ad in his re-election campaign. Sand, who won his first election as auditor in 2018 after deploying a campaign ad that humorously described his frugality, is at it again. His first 2022 re-election campaign ad again plays on the notion that Sand is relentlessly thrifty with taxpayer dollars. Sand is seeking re-election against Republican challenger Todd Halber, a businessman and former worker in the state alcoholic beverages division. The ad features a fictional, self-described government bureaucrat who laments Sand's attention to detail. Quote, "So 4 more years of Rob Sand as auditor? Sure, it will save Iowans millions, but who's going to save me?" the fictional bureaucrat says in the ad. And now, listeners, that's going to do it for today's reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls Courier for Wednesday, October 5th. I'm your volunteer reader, Bob Young. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, at any time. And we want to thank you for listening to your IRIS, Iowa's first and only radio reading service.